From WIPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Bail is a hot issue in the General Assembly session. What change should be made to assure that defendants who are not a threat don't get stuck in jail because they can't afford to post bond? Maryland's highest court wants judges to minimize use of money bail. The Legislative Black Caucus backs that approach, but the Senate has passed a bill telling judges they must look at money bail along with other options like pretrial supervision. Working for the bill is the bail bond industry, which made big contributions to key legislators last year. Common Cause Maryland says the donations are strategic.
When they're able to make these contributions, able to refresh the relationship, it gives them that slightly greater access when the legislative session gets hot and heavy.
It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. 2 months ago, Maryland's highest court voted unanimously to require judges to impose the least onerous condition when setting bail for a defendant who is not considered a flight risk. Those rules have not taken effect yet, and a bill backed by the bail bond industry would keep them from doing so. The Senate has passed that bill and sent it to the House of Delegates, but last week, the Legislative Black Caucus in the House voted 31-5 against the bill. Later in the show, we'll hear from a Senate advocate for the bill. But first, I want to talk to the executive director of Common Cause Maryland. The self-styled citizens' lobby tracked campaign contributions by the bail bond industry. It found they're high in Maryland compared to most other states. And there was a big surge in donations from bail-related interests just ahead of this year's legislative session. Jennifer Bevan-Dangle, executive director of Common Cause Maryland, is with me in the studio. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Why did you decide to profile contributions from the bail bond industry of all the places you could have put your resources?
When we were looking to see what industries we'd like to do a deeper dive into, looking at not just their lobbying expenditures, which we do every year, but also looking at their campaign giving, we were stunned that the bail bond industry giving in Maryland is so high, third in the nation behind only California and Florida, for the amount of donations given by the industry to our legislators. And that really resonated.
This is third in total dollars, not like adjusted for population.
That's correct. So when you look at a state like California with a larger legislature and a lot more population, it was very stunning to us that Maryland was so close behind these very large states and leading the nation otherwise.
So how much money are we talking about in donations from bail interests in Maryland?
Since 2011, which is how far back our research went, the industry has given over $288,000 to Maryland legislators. And they're focusing clearly on the legislators on the committees that hear their bills, judiciary and judicial proceedings.
Judiciary and judicial proceedings. You chronicled a big surge just before this legislative session.
We were very surprised to see the amount of money given in the last year. Typically, because Maryland's elections are on the off cycle, so 2018 is our next election here, you usually see donations by industries ramp up in that election year. That's when giving surges, campaigns kick off. What we saw with this industry was a very significant surge just in the last calendar year. So clearly not related to a campaign, but more related to this legislative session where they knew this bill would be debated.
You're assuming that. You don't know what prompted these donations.
True, but when you look at the chronology, there's certainly a correlation between the rules starting to take speed in the courts, the attorney general coming out in favor of reform, and suddenly this spike in giving by the industry. So it raises flags for us as a strong correlation.
You found a lot of donations, or at least I think a new pattern of donations, to members of the administration in Maryland, the Hogan administration.
That was a very interesting and new piece just in this last year, whereas the governor had not been a recipient of bail industry donations previously. In the last summer and fall, the industry cumulatively gave $11,000 to Governor Hogan and then $6,000 to Lieutenant Governor Rutherford. That was an interesting new relationship that the industry was clearly trying to start forming.
Why do you consider this money significant?
When you look at the spending as a percentage of the total raise, so we looked at the two chairs, and often in industry...
The chairs of the two judiciary committees.
That's correct. And often an industry will focus on the chairs of its relevant committees because the chairs in Maryland's system have so much power. With Senator Zirkin, the total...
Senator Bobby Zirkin, Democrat of Baltimore County, chairs the Senate Judicial Proceedings Committee.
The total giving to him in the last election cycle, so this doesn't even include the current most recent giving, it was 11% of his total fundraising. And then House Committee Chair Joe Valerio, it was 13% of his total campaign fundraising. So that's sizable, even as a percent of fairly sizable fundraising done by these committee chairmen.
You called your report on these donations from the bail bond industry pay to play. Why?
The goal of the report was to show how industries play the system and by making donations, both as part of the campaign cycle and then followed up by expenditures as lobbyists or through their lobbying entities. And the bail industry is a good example because they always follow up their campaign giving with a fairly expensive mid-legislative session dinner for their relevant committees, usually focused on the House committees. In fact, they've spent over $20,000 in the last 4 years on these dinners. So it's a snapshot of how an industry that's fairly small. We're not talking Exxon. We're not talking, you know, one of the industries that typically come to mind. But a very discreet industry can maximize its resources to build the relationships it needs to be heard in Annapolis.
That's Jennifer Bevan-Dangle, Executive Director of Common Cause Maryland, here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about campaign donations from the bail bond industry to Maryland elected officials. A lot of people hear the phrase pay to play in other settings. I'm not saying how they interpreted the headline of your report, but it implies that campaign contributions buy votes.
And we're very careful to say that these donations don't automatically buy a vote. And we have certainly seen a lot of good examples where legislators have maybe taken donations and then not voted in the best interest of their contributors. But what it's buying is a relationship. And Common Cause, I'm a registered lobbyist. We certainly see how the session works. There's so many bills. There's so many amendments. Having the relationship and the ability to be heard by the legislators can be very influential in what legislation ultimately passes in the session.
Do you think that's especially true of what I'll call last-minute donations? I mean, you chronicled of $57,000 that had been donated to Judicial Proceedings Chair Bobby Zirkin from 2011. I think he got $21,000 just in a few weeks before this legislative session. Is that especially significant?
This type of giving right before the session, it keeps that relationship fresh. It's almost the equivalent of if you have an old friend that you haven't talked to in years and they call you when you're really busy, you may or may not have time to answer the phone. But if they sent you a Christmas card and you reconnected, then you're much more likely to answer the phone and have that conversation. And so we certainly have seen a correlation for these industry donors that when they're able to make these contributions, able to refresh the relationship, it gives them that slightly greater access when the legislative session gets hot and heavy, which it certainly does.
But I have to point out, after the overwhelmingly negative vote of the Legislative Black Caucus against the Senate bill, many observers are predicting that that bill is going to die in the Rules Committee in the House. So can't citizens conclude the campaign donations didn't make a difference?
Citizen power will almost always win over the donations because the voters are the ultimate gatekeeper on the legislators. And ultimately, it is the voters that the legislators care about most because they want to be reelected.
So what do you mean by citizens' power in this case?
In this case, we saw a very coordinated effort by a lot of organizations that represent broad constituencies turning out and trying to get their position heard, pushing back, arguing, you know, their position on the bill, which was that this wasn't the best interest of people who are affected by the bail system. And it is encouraging to see that that voice could be heard and could drown out these types of sizable donations.
State election law does mandate disclosure of campaign contributions. It's cumbersome, but you were able to track contributions from this industry and shine a light on them. In that sense, is the system working?
We have some of the strongest disclosure laws in the nation here in Maryland, for which we're incredibly grateful. We were able to have an intern look at the industry filings to pull out principles associated with the industry and then scan through the campaign finance database to see how much they gave. And when you have disclosure like that, as you said, it doesn't impact the giving, but it shines the light on it, and it allows them to be held accountable to the relationships they're trying to form.
So you're not looking for changes in the disclosure laws?
We're always looking to plug loopholes. One of the big loopholes right now relates to LLCs. And so there's certainly work to be done, but overall they're very strong.
LLCs are?
Limited liability companies. And a lot of people who do especially local analysis of campaign giving will see developers commonly give through their LLCs. This was a big issue in the Baltimore mayoral race, in fact. And it's very hard to know who the individuals are behind these LLCs and to know if they are following the law or not. So there's still some gray areas and some shadowy corners of our campaign finance laws. But every year we tighten it up just a little bit more.
Thanks for talking to us.
Happy to be here.
Jennifer Bevendangle is Executive Director of Common Cause Maryland. At the On the Record page at WIPR.org, we have a link to its report on bail bond industry donations to Maryland elected officials titled Pay to Play. We reached out to Senator Bobby Zirkin but didn't hear back from his office. Quick break now on the record. When we're back, we'll speak to the state senator who sponsored the bill. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking today about bail. 2 months ago, Maryland's highest court voted to reform the bail system by telling judges to give preference to non-financial conditions when considering whether a defendant can be released before trial. In other words, less use of money bail. The rule has not taken effect yet, but the Washington Post has quoted some bail bondsmen saying their business already has been hurt. In money bail, defendants pay a bondsman 10% of the bail set by the court. It's non-refundable. If the defendant doesn't show up for trial, the bondsman tries to find him or else must pay the court the entire amount. The industry is working in support of legislation that would essentially block the new judicial rules. That legislation has passed the Senate and been sent to the House, where its chances look dim. The Legislative Black Caucus voted decisively to oppose it. Prince George's Democratic Senator Anthony Muse sponsored the bill, and he joins us now to discuss it. Welcome to On the Record, Senator Muse.
It's my pleasure.
Why do you think this bill is a good idea?
I think this bill is a good idea. If you look and study what is happening in the history of it, we are all trying to determine the best way to keep poor people out of jail while awaiting trial. We agree with that, especially nonviolent persons and those who are in there for misdemeanor crimes. No matter which side of the issue you're on, that's what we're all trying to do. Presently, bond without the court's rule takes preference over pretrial release. That is, the many conditions in the place of bond, which some call non-financial. Now, the opponents of SB 983 want bail to drop down to the lowest condition for release, the court rule, or set conditions in lieu of paying a bond. That's how it works now. My bill simply says make both bail and the rest of the court conditions equal and available when the judge makes a decision with this in mind. The judge must make, and this, these words are in the bill, must make an individualized determination regarding the release or detention of a defendant. So they must take into account their situation. Number two, I put all of the court's ruling in my bill, so kind of combine them together. They must take into account, according to 5201-A, the safety of the victim, so you don't let dangerous people out on the street. So this bill does not do that. They must take that into consideration so you're not releasing dangerous criminals. Lastly, they must take into account, according to my bill, the defendant's ability to pay a financial condition of release to be certain that you don't keep indigent persons in place. That's 5-201-2. Now, the real issue here is preference.
I'm sorry, I'm not sure I caught that. The real issue is...
is preference.
One, preference.
Shall bail be considered above all the other conditions? Bail preferred first. That's the way it is now. Under the court's rule, bail would be considered the lowest or the least considered condition. Okay? That's how that would operate. My bill simply says put bail and the conditions, give them equal preference depending on one's individualized assessment. Now, I'll tell you why I think this bill is important. You said it just now, that the courts reformed this with preferences to non-financial means. However, when you look at every condition that is there, they all carry with them money, a fiscal note. For example, and not only that, but under the conditions, my other concern is, and that's why I put this bill is that you have innocent people who are awaiting trial being treated as though they have already been found guilty. So let's look at the conditions and why I'm doing what I'm doing. The condition. If I'm arrested for driving under the influence, the court now must say, well, bail is the last thing that I'll consider, but these conditions I'll consider first. Here's a condition. You have to wear an ankle bracelet. And keep in mind the GPS system. Keep in mind that they are non-conditions, and the rule says a judge may apply one or more. So you can apply many as you can. But there are no non-financial conditions set here. When the judge says you have to wear a GPS bracelet around your ankle, that's a $400 a month cost. So if I'm sitting in jail and I'm there and I'm saying, well, I'm here for drunk driving, my case may be 8 or 9 months down the road, I may prefer the $500 bond and just walk until my court date. I may not want to visit a probation officer weekly. I pay for that. I may not want to take a urinalysis twice a week. I pay for that. So if the goal is for poor people to not have financial bondage, this certainly is not the only way out of this, especially in a system in which the Attorney General himself came and testified before my committee and said there are racial inequities in the way the judges are applying bond, the way prosecutors are determining who gets a recommendation of bond or no bond. If you're telling me, and if they are telling me, that instead of a $500 or $1,000 bond, that I'm going to have a monthly bill, a part of these conditions, house arrest, as I'm awaiting trial. So I pay $450 for a house arrest. Under the pretrial agreement, when the judge says you're going to have one of these pretrial conditions, I have to go and sign up. When I sign up, there's a cost to sign up. If they tell me I have house arrest, I have to pay for a specific line, phone line, to be put into my house. I've been asking everyone, where are the non-financial conditions here? Every one of them is simply shifting money from the bail industry to another industry. And to me, that's like taking a coat off. That's like taking a monster and taking his coat off and putting on a new coat. That's not the answer to this. That's why this bill is in. Lastly, the last part of this bill is for us to take the next 9 months, since there's so much emotionalism around this and innuendos, and take the next 9 months and let's study how judges are implementing bail or the conditions equal, keeping in mind the safety of the victims, keeping in mind the financial condition first, and applying the least restrictive means, so that we can come back and study this and not only say to judges, you have to do this, But to say to them, we are watching how you are applying this in terms of race, in terms of economics, across the board.
Why is the industry supporting your bill?
I'm sure the industry would support the bill. The industry would support the bill just like the ankle bracelet system is opposed to the bill. That's not my consideration.
That's Prince George's Democrat Senator Anthony Muse here on The Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. He is sponsor of bail legislation that would block new court rules to minimize the use of cash bail. As you pointed out, quoting Attorney General Frost, race is always an issue in criminal justice matters. You are African-American. You represent a predominantly African-American district. And you look across the state house, you see 31 of 40 members of the Legislative Black Caucus in the House opposing your bill. What do you see that they are missing?
Well, here's what I see. And let me correct one thing. This does not do away with any of the court's conditions. Not at all. All of those conditions are in this bill. The court's conditions are here. So it doesn't block their conditions. It simply says you must weigh bail and the conditions equally depending on the victim. So it doesn't block it at all. Word for word, it's in this bill. When I look at what the Black Caucus have done, I respect them. But at the same time, the NAACP has come out in support of it. The National Southern Christian Leadership Conference national president flew in to testify, giving National Southern Christian Leadership Conference support, representing one of the largest black organizations in the nation. There were black judges who helped me to write this bill and went over the bill, such as Judge Alexander Williams, who was a former state's attorney in Prince George's County, and a federal judge on the bench, who helped me to write this bill along with these other agencies. They all pitched in. Domestic violence persons came and said, we want to make sure that we are protected, our clients are protected from dangerous victims. So that went right into the bill. They helped with that. All it says to me is that we're equally divided on this. We are divided on this, and as such, the study is necessary so we can separate hype from data. And yes, as an African American who has represented an African American district for about 15 years, what I have seen is injustice in the system, period. And the answer for me is not taking bail away and saying that's financial, so we're going to make it non-financial, when every condition simply shifts the money of poor people into another industry. That does not make sense to me.
As you know, the campaign contributions by the bail bond industry have been an issue with this legislation. Common Cause Maryland tracked $87,000 in contributions from bail interests in the last year, including a surge in late contributions just before the legislative session, and that included a $5,000 contribution to you. What effect, if any, do contributions like that have?
Well, let's talk about that for a moment, because you're right, and it's good that the newspapers disclose that. That is their job. Their job is full disclosure to the public so that the public can make up their minds. When you look at the 300 or 400 donors who over the past year have donated maybe $300,000 cash and in-kind services to my campaign, you just can't pull them out. Let me give an example. Attorney General Brian Frosch is on the other side of this issue. Sometimes he is my good friend. Sometimes we agree, sometimes we do not agree. He contributed $2,500 to $3,000. The teachers union contributed to me. The firefighters contributed to me. The Teamsters contributed to me. Now, that list can go on and on and on. When out of that, people have to make their own decision and their own assessment. But the way that we do it, and the reason there's a late surge with everyone, is because you can't accept money after session begins. So all of us have our fundraisers the very last part, that part of the year, right before session starts. So it seems to be that way, but guess what? Everyone donated around the same time. Over 200 persons. The question that readers have and that have to ask is whether or not I believe that money was taken in some way to influence one's vote. Now, I'm not going to address that issue because I don't think that's what the newspapers were doing. They were doing their job to disclose it. There are persons who have agreed and disagreed. There are certainly larger industries that will not give a dime to me. You take, for example, MGM. I oppose MGM coming. So if money was an influence, then I certainly would have been on there saying, yes, bring MGM.
The casino,
I make my decisions based on what is right and what is wrong.
The casino in Southern Prince George's County. MGM Grand. Jennifer Bevan-Dangle of Common Cause told us she is not saying such contributions buy votes, but she does think they give donors more access to make their case to elected officials.
And
is she right?
It's up to that elected official to determine whether or not he agrees or disagrees with the issue. I'm not going to impugn the integrity of any of my hardworking colleagues in Annapolis. Let's go back to this again. There is no way. Brian Frosch was the chair of my committee. He liked the work that I did. He raised the money. No one is going to say that the attorney general was trying to buy a vote. The teachers union, who have issues in front of us, they give because they either appreciate the job that you're doing or they don't give because they don't like the job you're doing. I think that is what that's my takeaway and what I have experienced. No one has ever come to me and will never and asked me to break the law and do something like that.
Senator Muse, I appreciate your talking to us. Thank you so much.
It's my pleasure.
The Reverend Anthony Muse is a Democrat who represents southwestern Prince George's County in the state Senate. He sponsored a bill to maintain money bail along with other options as alternatives to holding defendants in jail before trial. I'm Sheila Cast. Glad you've been with us today on The Record. Come back tomorrow.